Demonstrators across the U.S. coming together in solidarity to march against the day of hate and violence that unfolded at a white nationalist rally in Charlottesville, Virginia. A car plowed into a group of counter-protesters, killing a 32-year-old woman and injuring 19 others. The driver, 20-year-old James Fields from Ohio, has been arrested and is being held on suspicion of second-degree murder. State and federal investigators will begin to probe the incident, looking for a motive.
This week marks 10 years since the start of the financial crisis.
The credit crunch started on that day. Money markets never recovered from that one-off jump. The U.S. authorities intervened. They backstopped J.P. Morgan buying Bear Stearns. Arguably, that was a mistake. If Bear Stearns had been allowed to go bust, financial Darwinism would have come into play. The banks would have realized the trouble they were in. Lehman Brothers would have found itself a buyer instead of Dickie Fuld continuing to pretend liquidity was fine and everything was going to be okay. And the system could have cleansed itself.
Providing the results of an HIV test within minutes. This first-of-its-kind machine is aiming to encourage more people to find out whether they have contracted the virus. Fingerprick self-testing kits can be collected free and anonymously from the touchscreen machine, aiming to give more privacy and help reduce anxiety, as traditional testing methods can take a few days to arrive. Instead, a user can choose when they wish to give one blood sample and can expect a result within 15 minutes.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It is August 14th, 2017, 5:10 in the morning. Glad you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day underway. Really another business week getting going. Lots to cover in the program today. In a minute, we'll talk about privatization of air traffic control and the future of the nation's airports and air transportation system. We'll bring in a representative from the National Business Aviation Association. A little bit later on in the program, too, we'll talk a little bit about how you might not want to act like a bleep at work. It starts with an A. The word starts with an A. We can't say it on the radio, but Melissa Davies will be here. She's a trainer, and she has all kinds of expertise in how you are to behave at work and how you can better yourself on the job. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning. Dow futures are pointing toward opening gains on Wall Street later this morning, up about 88 points right now. The S&P and NASDAQ futures are higher as well. NASDAQ futures up about 30 points. In Asia this morning, markets are generally positive, with the Nikkei up about 1%, the Hang Seng, the Shanghai, all up about 1% as well. European markets are generally higher, too, with the FTSE up about 0.5% this morning, 41 points. The DAX in Germany is up about 1%, 126 points. And in France, the markets are up about 1% as well, 44 points. The CAC is up. That's good for about 0.8%. So markets looking pretty good this morning. Oil is trading a little bit lower, off about 0.5%, 21 cents at $48.61 a barrel. Gold and silver are both trading a little bit lower. There's some news developing this morning. First, with North Korea, China says it will stop importing North Korean iron ore, coal, fish, and other products in 3 weeks under U.N. sanctions imposed over North Korea's nuclear program. The Chinese Customs Agency says this morning it'll stop processing imports at midnight on September 5th. China, the isolated North's main trading partner, has been reluctant to push leader Kim Jong-un's regime too hard for fear it might collapse, but Beijing is becoming increasingly frustrated with North Korea and joined in approving a UN Security Council ban on August 5th on coal and other key goods. This is a major development in the situation with North Korea, and that could be why we're seeing markets sort of relieve some of that tension that's been there over the past couple of weeks. Also today, President Trump is poised to seek a trade investigation of China for alleged theft of American technology and intellectual property. Mr. Trump expected to sign an executive order today asking his trade office to consider the probe. The step won't be a surprise to Beijing, and it comes as Trump seeks China's help in dealing with North Korea. There's no deadline for deciding if an investigation is necessary. An investigation could easily last about a year. Well, earlier this year, we reported, and you probably remember us reporting, that the government was thinking about privatizing the air traffic control system, the ATC. Where does this stand? We thought we'd bring in Dan Hubbard this morning on the opening bell. He's the Senior Vice President of the National Business Aviation Association. Dan, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Good morning, Steve. Good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you here with us. So let's begin with that question. Where do things stand right now with this proposal?
Well, let me just unpack that question for just a second here. I'll make two quick points. You know, when we're talking about privatizing the ATC, I think people need to just remember that it's pretty commonly agreed in Washington and elsewhere that America is very fortunate. We've got the world's largest, safest, most diverse. We've got the best aviation system. And what we want to do is continue, investing in that system so that it remains the world's best 5, 10, 25 years from now. And that brings me to my second point. You know, it's the public's aviation system. It's our system of airports and airspace. The taxpayers fund it. And that's why we're concerned about a proposal over in the House of Representatives, because given that it is the public's aviation system, it's appropriate that it's overseen by the public's elected representatives in Congress. They make sure that everybody has access to airports and airspace. So not just necessarily Chicago's O'Hare or Midway, but even the smaller airports like Palwaukee and other airports. And what the proposal in the House would do is take Congress totally out of the equation. It would hand the public's aviation system for free over to a small private group that would be largely dominated by the airlines. And our concern is, if that's the case, will the system continue to be run in the public's best interest, or is it going to begin to be run in the way that the airlines see it in their best interest? And I think that's a real concern for every American.
You know, let's talk about a couple of those things. First of all, you talk about how safe the air system is. I think everybody who flies knows this. It's been a long time since we've had any sort of major disaster with an airline. It is generally pretty safe and has been. Is the fear that changing this might rock that cart in some way?
Well, I don't think that's so much the concern. I think the concern is as it relates to access. So if the airlines are running the aviation system, you know, where might all of the resources be put? Might they be put into airports all across the country as they are today? Or might the resources get put mostly into the airlines' large hub airports? You know, this board that I'm talking about, represented on it would be the big airlines themselves, the cargo airlines, the regional airlines, the airlines union, and a representative from one of the big airports that serves the big airlines. Now, there would be others on the board, but you can start to get an idea here of where the focus is likely to be when you've got that kind of setup that's unaccountable to Congress and is basically airline-centric in its focus.
And the other part of this, too, is, you know, there have been experiments across the country with privatizing different public properties. Here in Chicago, we had the parking meters go public. We also have done the Skyway, big things, and some of it has not worked out so well. Are there lessons to be learned by this turning public property into private entities?
Well, that's a great point, and the answer is yes. You know, some people have argued that if we privatize the nation's air traffic system, well, then funding for it is going to become more reliable. You know, I would point to two things. Number one, for decades now, Congress has ensured full funding for the FAA. In fact, sometimes they provide more than what the current administration asks for. But beyond that, when you look at funding, we have seen privatized systems where steadiness in funding just hasn't worked out. I think the most profound example is really over in the United Kingdom, where they stood up a privatized ATC, and within a couple short years, all of a sudden, the revenue, it was out. Basically, what they had to do was ask the taxpayers for a bailout over in the UK. So, you know, here in the U.S., we've had Congress continually fund the Federal Aviation Administration. So I think we want to know what exactly is the problem in the U.S. that we're trying to solve. And, you know, NBAA, my association, we're not alone in our concerns about moving to this kind of system. We've been joined by over 100 U.S. mayors who've written Congress, 100 business leaders, many of whom are pilots, have written Congress. You've got people in both political parties in Congress who've raised concerns, congressional watchdogs and consumer groups. So this is a pretty large, diverse, and growing chorus of concern about this whole idea.
Dan, hang on with this. We're going to continue this conversation in just a moment with Dan Hubbard, who's the Senior Vice President of the National Business Aviation Association, with us this morning here in the opening bell, talking about potential privatization of the air traffic control system.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Investors ended last week on a high note, pushing the Dow Jones up 14 points to 21,858. The Standard & Poor's 500 advanced 3 points on Friday. The Nasdaq composite picked up nearly 40 points to 62,56. JCPenney stock fell below $4 on Friday, marking an all-time low for the 115-year-old retailer. The company has about 875 stores left and saw sales at established locations fade during its most recent quarter. Payless Shoe Source emerged from bankruptcy protection last week and immediately posted a help wanted sign. The board of directors is looking for a new chief executive officer. In the meantime, Payless will be led by an executive committee. The number of homes for sale is at a 20-year low, with many baby boomers reluctant to trade up or down. The crunch has driven up home prices, with a few markets surging more than others. In Dallas, the average price of a house is up 8%. In Seattle, more than 13%. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. We're on this morning with Dan Hubbard. He's the Senior Vice President of National Business Aviation Association. We're talking about privatization of ATC, the air traffic control system. Dan, before the break, we were talking a little bit about this, but I'd like to have you talk a little bit more about your organization. You represent business aviation. These are CEOs flying on private planes and other general aviation aircraft. You're afraid that you're not going to be at this table of the airlines who might control the airports and the ATC system. Is that a fair assessment?
Well, except to say that I think what people often don't know, is that the airplanes are often used by entrepreneurs and companies. They're small and mid-sized businesses, and they're often located outside the metropolitan area. So they may not be right there in the heart of Chicago. And they need access to these smaller airports in order to do business from the smaller towns and communities. You know, there's 5,000 airports across the U.S., and only about 10% of those have airline service. So you're looking at, you know, like I said, entrepreneurs who need to reach other airports outside of those served by the airlines. And yes, then that is the concern, is that that won't be sufficiently recognized if you have a privatized ATC that is basically largely represented by the airlines and is basically airline-centric in its focus.
There is a lot of money involved here, and not just money in terms of profits for private businesses, but there's a lot of economic output that's involved here and jobs that are involved. What's the threat here in terms of potentially losing some of that?
Sure, that's a good question. So, you know, what we're talking about here, business aviation, or, you know, the use of an airplane to help somebody meet their business transportation needs, it helps support more than 1 million jobs and more than $200 billion every year in economic activity. You know, like I said, a lot of that's in these small towns, rural areas, small communities all across the country. And I just think that if you make moves that begin to harm or hamper access to these airports for these companies, then, of course, they're losing out on potential economic opportunities. And then, you know, there are a host of other benefits coming out of these airports that are not necessarily economic in nature. So you could think of the civic benefits like law enforcement and medevac, flights like that. Also humanitarian flights. A lot of these companies, they provide their airplanes for free for veterans returning home from service so they can reunite with their families, for cancer patients to get to clinics for treatments. Things like that. So, you know, there is the economic concern, but there are a whole host of other, you know, services that might be hampered, and that raises a concern for us as well.
What, if anything, could change about this proposal that would bring your organization and some of these groups that you've talked about that are opposed to it to the table?
Well, the number one thing is that we've got to keep Congress in the equation. The public's elected representatives in Congress ensure that the focus remains on having our aviation system serve all of the public. That means all citizens, all communities. And so we want to keep that in place. We just don't think that it's appropriate for a small private board that will likely be airline-centric in its focus and totally unaccountable to Congress, by the way, to be making the choices about what is ostensibly a public asset, the nation's aviation system.
The other part of this, too, is a lot of people I know in just talking with them myself, sometimes you hear them interchange privatization with modernization. And you touched on this earlier, but talk to me about the danger of that, because I think most of us would agree our airports need modernized. But this doesn't appear to be the answer, does it?
That's a great point. And I don't think people should confuse privatization with modernization. Here's just one way to look at it. You know, if we've got an airline dominated board overseeing the system. Well, then that means the airlines are going to govern the choices about investment, for example, in technologies. You know, people often think of modernizing something as having it become more innovative. Well, these are the same airlines whose IT systems have left thousands of people stranded at airports in recent months because the IT systems are outdated and they crash. These are also the same airlines who have lobbied successfully against installing equipment in their own cockpits that really it's the cornerstone equipment for the next generation aviation system. So this is the group that's going to make decisions about these kinds of investments. And of course, that's why I think we shouldn't be confusing modernization with privatization.
Dan, good of you to be with us this morning. Thanks for joining the conversation on this. And if people want to find out more information, where can they go to learn more about this?
Thanks for asking. They can go to atcnotforsale.com. Not only can they find out more, they can contact their members of Congress about the issue and oppose the bill.
All right. Dan, thanks again for being with us this morning.
All right. Thanks for having me, Steve.
Dan Hubbard is the Senior Vice President of the National Business Aviation Association. You can also find them online at nbaa.org.
Now, WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Monday edition of The Opening Bell. You want to be a better person at work, either as a coworker or an employer? There is some help for you available in a book that was published earlier this year called How Not to Be a Bleep at Work. An A-hole is what we can say this morning. We're happy to have the author with us this morning, Melissa Davies. Melissa, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So good of you to be here. We can't say the word, the name, but I think people get the idea. So how do we not be an A-hole at work?
Yes, I mean, the book actually is How Not to Act Like a Bleep at Work. And I mean, how do we not do that? I think we really focus on having empathy for one another, establishing connection, having good communication skills, and stop making assumptions about people would really be helpful.
And this part of this has to do with sort of understanding who you are, coming to being comfortable with who you are, and learning how to be a good leader or a good coworker, right?
Very much so. In my executive coaching practice, I work with people who will say, well, I just assumed they would do such and such, or, you know, they should act that way. And we're putting on our own assumptions and our own beliefs on people, as opposed to really recognizing how folks are, what's going on in their lives, because we really don't know how people show up at each day.
In
we
your
get
book-
ourselves all twist. Sorry.
Sure, go ahead.
I was going to say, we get ourselves all twisted up in what we believe should be going on, what should be happening, and yet it's not necessarily the truth.
And this can be the challenge, I suppose, with any situation, but is it that we're not listening? Is it that we're not engaged properly? Is it that we're not focused at all? Or how would you describe being in that situation?
Well, in my book, the main character is a mid-level manager who's technically proficient, but behaviorally she's a mess. And what we find is that in leadership, we've been continuing to hire people for management and leadership positions because they were technically proficient. But those behavioral skills that we used to call soft skills, people aren't very strong at them often, but they miss out the fact of just how important those are and that they're oftentimes more important than the technical skills. So we want to focus on the problem solving. We want to get focused on getting things done, but we trample over people, which are really our greatest resource at work. We trample over them in the effort to meet the mission when we forget all about them, and they're the ones that are going to be there when the next problem happens.
What is the challenge of training people to do that? And do business schools do enough to train these leaders to do what you've described?
So one of the great challenges, I think, is that people will go, oh, you're going to soft skill training, you're singing Kumbaya and hugging it up while you're there.
Beating a drum.
That sort of, right, exactly.
Yeah.
They get that sort of attitude that goes with it, and yet it's critical. It's critical. So for me, I think one of the challenges in class is to allow people the space to joke about it, but to learn some serious skills. And then the other part of it is that when they go back to back into their organizations, these things have to be supported, modeled, and managed from above. And when they're not, then it teaches people that that really didn't matter anyway. So, you know, it is being taught in leadership in management schools. I don't really believe it's being taught to the greatest level that it could be, but it must be modeled. It must be supported back in the organization.
You work a lot with the military and government agencies, but it's the military part of that that I'm more interested in. Do we have different candidates for these leadership positions coming out of the military than we do from the private sector?
We do, and so one of the things I do when I coach and work with my military folks when they're transitioning out is to really examine what are the things that they have that have made them very successful while they're in the military, and how are those going to impact being in corporate America? Because some of the things that make you successful when you're a senior leader, either enlisted or an officer in the military, are not necessarily going to transfer as the same skills into private sector. Because people have a different level of task focusedness. You know, folks, when they come out of the military, if you hire somebody from the military, you are getting somebody with heart, with dedication, with commitment, mission focus. And sometimes we have to kind of help them understand that you don't need quite that level. You do have to go home on a Friday night. You know, you do need to get some rest. Whereas understanding that the leadership skills, because of chain of command and how people will follow that straightforward top-down approach, doesn't always happen the same way in other types of organizations outside of that military structure.
You know, in one of the things, too, you talk about is trying to get people to show up with their best selves. And I know that's sort of a catch-all general feeling, but what do you mean by that?
So when I ask somebody to show up with their best self, I mean, to me it means showing up fully present, able to work with others, able to see that it's not all about me, able to have empathy for others and to have empathy for yourself, to be present and to be able to say, so help me understand what you're doing here. Help me understand how my behavior impacts yours, as opposed to me running around going, oh, it's all about me. I have to get this done, and I need you. And so how do I show up in a manner that helps myself to be successful but also helps the people around me to be successful? A level of consistency, honesty, integrity that allows myself and others to develop trust for one another.
Is it sometimes we hear the phrase, it's hard to teach an old dog new tricks. Is it possible to find people who've been in organizations for long periods of time and change their behavior or change the way that they view themselves and their workers?
Without a doubt. I mean, I work with clients who have been in an organization for 20, 30, or in their careers for 20, 30, 40 years. And if you can show them how their behavior, how their choices are impacting others, and if they're in a leadership role where they really see how it matters, yes, you can change your behavior. Because a successful leader wants others to be empowered and to help them to and support each other to meet the mission of the organization. If they recognize that their behavior is having a negative impact on that, then yes, they can learn to change. I mean, I always believe that with behavior, I have to want to change. It has to be something that's negatively impacting me in a way that I want to fix it. And if you can show them that, people will make change.
One of the subtitle of your book, by the way, is Simple Reminders of How to Be Who You Really Want to Be at Work and in Life. We've been talking a lot about the work part of this, but does the life part of it come as a result of fixing your work side?
I think they're both part and parcel. You know, if I'm showing little empathy for people at work, I'm probably not showing much for it in my friendship. And so that helps as well. I mean, I talk to people in class, in my classes and my coaching clients about the idea that language has power. And so the way we speak to ourselves, oh, that was stupid. Why did you do that? We would never say that to our friends or to our colleagues, but we say it to ourselves. So learning to have that same level of empathy and connection for others, but showing that to ourselves. And when I change myself, you know, if I show up with a different level of energy, if I'm more calm, if I'm more centered, if I'm more positive, then I get that back from others. People will typically respond in kind. And so if I show up that way amongst friendships and my relationships, I'm going to get a better response. Just as if I show up at work, the same thing will happen.
So if folks are listening this morning and they want to start turning over this leaf, what would be the first couple of steps you could give them to do that on this Monday morning?
So, I mean, I think instead of showing up and having that kind of antagonistic attitude, or if you don't understand why somebody's doing something or you don't think it'll work, instead of saying, well, you know, that's never going to work, and show some body language, just say to them, well, help me understand how you see that fitting in. share with me a little, you know, a little bit about how you think that will work. That's one thing. Ask some friends or some colleagues, for trusted people, for some feedback. How am I showing up at work? If there was one thing I could do differently that would be an improvement to our team, what would it be? And be prepared that people may share some information with you where you think, well, ouch, that kind of hurt. And instead of saying, well, getting all defensive with them, just saying, thank you for trusting me enough to share that with me. You know, asking folks for some honest feedback and being prepared to receive it.
Melissa, thank you for the advice this morning, and thank you for being with us here on The Opening Bell.
Thank you so much.
And Melissa Davies, you can find her book, by the way, bleepatwork.com. It's How Not to Act Like a Bleep at Work. And you can also follow Melissa on Twitter at Melissa Wiseways. More information, too, at wisewaysconsulting.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:52. Welcome back to the program on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. We're looking for a strong open on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures now up about 94 points. NASDAQ futures are up 32, and S&P futures are up about 14 points. Markets are generally all positive this morning. Let's get the latest on agriculture and commodities now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Well, as we move into the second half of August, there'll probably be some market talk about cool temperatures. Normally in August, the soybean crop appreciates getting some heat, and even some of the corn crop, but we've seen very little of that so far in the month of August. And that will bring talk into the marketplace that if it delays the maturing of the crop, then we'll be susceptible to an early frost. But I don't see any frost in the forecast as yet. But the Illinois State Fair went through its first weekend, and a lot of activity. Google and the Illinois State Fair and the 4-H people coming together with a $1.5 million grant to further the advancement of education of using technology. This coming week, of course, the first talks will get underway on renegotiating the NAFTA agreement that's been in place for 30 years. And that first discussion will get underway on Friday. Back to the State Fair. We'll be there tomorrow for Salute to Agriculture Day. The 10 o'clock brunch will honor farm families of Illinois. And then in the afternoon at 5 o'clock, I'll be emceeing the auction of the champions, champion commodities, and also the champion livestock. So I'm looking forward to seeing a lot of you at the Illinois State Fair tomorrow. Come on down. Enjoy a good state fair. You have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. A couple of other stories we're watching for you this morning. The American workplace is apparently grueling, stressful, and surprisingly hostile for most people. So concludes an in-depth study of nearly 3,000 U.S. workers by the RAND Corporation, Harvard Medical School, and the University of California at Los Angeles. Among the findings, nearly one in five workers share the study calls disturbingly high, says they face a hostile or threatening environment at work. Nearly 55% say they face unpleasant and potentially hazardous conditions. Nearly three-quarters say they spend at least a fourth of their time on the job in intense or repetitive physical labor. Telecommuting is rare, even though we hear a lot about it. 78% say they are required to be present in their workplace during working hours. Only 38% say their job offers good prospects for advancement. About half say they work on their own time to meet the demands of their job. Just some of the findings of that American Workplace Study by the RAND Corporation. This morning there's a story about the Aldi company. Aldi, the no-frills German grocer that is present here in the United States and expanding in the United States, says it will offer grocery delivery for the first time in three American cities by the end of the month. The company says the partnership with Instacart will deliver groceries to people in Atlanta, Dallas, and Los Angeles. Shoppers will be able to order goods on Instacart's website or app, and Instacart workers will pull them off the shelf and deliver them. Customers can schedule delivery for that day. Now, the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Monday, August the 14th. No major economic reports today, but we have a couple of events happening. We told you about that workplace report that was issued by the RAND Corporation. We'll have more details of that as we move through the day. 3,000 blue-collar and white-collar workers talking about their life at work. Also today, the key to happiness may be owning all of your emotions, including anger and hatred. There's a new Secret to Happiness report being issued today. SpaceX will launch the Falcon 9 rocket with the 14th Dragon spacecraft on the way to the space station, delivering with it a supercomputer at 11:31 a.m. Chicago time. And through the rest of the week, Home Depot earnings tomorrow, Census Bureau estimates of July retail sales. Wednesday, NAFTA talks begin. Target earnings come out on Wednesday. Thursday, Walmart earnings and Gap earnings. Friday, consumer confidence preliminary data for August. Some of the things that could move the markets this weekend today, August 14th, 2017.